माधवा जय कुंज बिहारी जशोरानंदना जय ब्रज जन रंजना जशोरानंदना जय ब्रज जन रंजना जमुना तीरवनचारे जय कुंज बिहारे जय जमुना तीरवनचारे जय कुंज बिहारे जमुना तीरवनचारे जय कुंज बिहारे जय जमुना तीरवनचारे जय कुंज बिहारे जय राधा माधवा जय कुंज बिहारे जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस प्रिय व्रजाचार्य सरस्वती श्री श्रीमारे डिवाइन ग्रेशल एसी भक्ति व्रंत स्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णववृंद की नाम आचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम से गहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गराधार श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौ गोप कपीना श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरी गोवर्धन की श्री वृंदावन धाम की श्री मायापुर धाम की गंगा माई की जमुना माई की भक्ति देवी के तुलसी देवी के समवेता भक्त वृंद की जयनताय गौर प्रेम All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Kshanardha Manyur Bhagavan Shishyam Vyachashta Bhargava Kamosya Kriyatam Rajan Nainam Tyaktum Ihotsahe Kshanardha Manyur Bhagavan Shishyam Vachashta Bhargava Kamosya Kriyatam Rajan Nainam Tyaktum Ihotsahe Shan Ardha Manyur Bhagavan Shishyam Vachashta Bhargava Kamosya Kriyatam Rajan Nainam Tyaktum Ihotsahe Shana Ardha, lasting only a few moments. Manyu, whose anger? Bhagavan, the most powerful. Shishyam, unto his disciple. Vrishaparva, Vyachashta, said. Bhargava, Sukracharya, the descendant of Bhrigu. Kama, the desire. Asyaha, of this Devayani. Kriyatam, please fulfill. Rajan, O king. Na, not. Enam, this girl. Chaktum, to give up. Iha, in this world. Utsahe, I am unable. Translation. King Vrishaparva understood that Sukracharya was coming to chastise or curse him. Consequently, before Sukracharya came to his house, Vrishaparva went out and fell down in the street at the feet of his guru and satisfied him, checking his wrath. The powerful Sukracharya was angry for a few moments, but upon being satisfied, he said to Vrishaparva, "My dear king, kindly fulfill the desire of Devayani, for she is my daughter, and in this world I cannot give her up or neglect her." Purport. Sometimes a great personality like Sukracharya cannot neglect sons and daughters, for sons and daughters are by nature dependent on their father, and the father has affection for them. Although Sukracharya knew that the quarrel between Devayani and Sarmishka was childish, as Devayani's father, he had to side with his daughter. He did not like to do this, but he was obliged to because of affection. He plainly admitted that although he should not have asked the king for mercy for his daughter, because of affection, he could not avoid doing so. So you see here the unfolding of this pastime and all these activities. What is outstanding here? Because otherwise you see is that you're having this childish rivalry between girls that's involving their fathers and creating, you know, so much difficulty. So in the modern context, we either go along with things, we have no particular idea what to do, it just goes along like the waves. Or we speak up and say, this is stupid, why are you being so stupid? So the problem is either of those two solutions don't actually establish or continue the culture very well. So we see here, it's a matter of a perspective by which this is happening. That perspective is very important. Many times we take it, no, it's the external form, you know, it's like, okay, he's supporting the daughter, or he's, you know, telling her how, you know, what's the proper thing to do, or the different things like that. You understand? We'll generally look at it like that. What should he do on that external platform? But what's the vision? What do you base that decision on? You're going to do something, what are you basing it on? Right? Because otherwise if you ask, okay, you're chastising and telling it, why? Oh, because it's right. Well, what's the perspective that says it's right? Or what's the perspective that says it's wrong? You understand? This is the thing that the Vedic culture is very prominent element, is because it's about the basis of authority of these things. How you would decide. Because if it's just the own mind in that, today it works one way, tomorrow it goes another way, there's no stability. And because of lack of stability, there's no stability in the family, in the community, in the culture. And so there's no security for anyone. So how to rectify that, how to create that stableness, right? Because we're looking for stableness in devotional service. If we're stable in devotional service, that catches Krishna's attention. Krishna's always watching, but he takes it that you're serious if you're stable about your service. Because he has no problem in being stable, right? He's been in our heart as Paramatma since time immemorial, so for him it's not a problem. It's not that, yeah, some lifetimes he's there and sometimes he steps out for a little bit and... yeah, I don't really like the creamy bhojan, hanging out thing, so I'll just go do something else for that time. And no, he's always there. So that stableness then shows that we're serious. So in the Vedic culture, it's designed that even the grossest materialist, if they're following the Vedic culture, they're doing things that are actually preliminary for bhakti. They're following authority, they're basing things on scripture, they have a teacher, they have they have authority, the guru. They follow the traditions that are there, the practices that are there. You know, they have that responsibility, it's based on relationships. So all these are you could say, aspects that are useful in bhakti. So the Vedic culture is all about cultivating these things. But now most people, you know, cultivate these things simply for their materialism because it gets better materialism. Right? If you study at a job, it works out more that you get economically gain more than if you're irregular. You know, if you're regular in a relationship, the relationship goes better. You're regular in whatever you do, it will give you better position. If you're more considerate of relationships, it will give you a better position. Does that make sense? You follow authority, it always works out better. Right? So this is the kind of element that's there. But Did you notice in the first two examples I gave, we just let it go, but the third example, when I said authority, then we're quickly running to find examples of where following authority isn't good. Did you notice that? That's a specific weakness for the Western, you know, what doesn't accept authority. So the other two, yeah, heard that one. Wait a minute. No, I can think of one really extreme example where it didn't work out. You know, what about those guys at Nuremberg when they asked them, why did you do that? And they just said, just following orders. Yeah. But there's a good chance he didn't think of that one. Yeah. So, but we understand the whole Vedic culture is geared towards that you're doing things that are favorable for bhakti, even though you're not interested in bhakti. That's because we have to remember it's Krishna's world, right? Yeah, and he is a man, so in that way you could say it's a man's world, but it's the man's world, not a man's world. Does that make sense? Only a few get that one, right? So, that whole point is that it's about him. The material world is there because he wants to bring the living entities back to Godhead. Right? So now, if they're following a culture that is all about doing the forms that are of use, at least the principles that are useful in devotional service, the specific form may not be so important. Then all you have to do is add the touch of the pure devotee, and voila, you're situated nicely in devotional service. You don't have all the different difficulties that are there. If one comes from a background or culture that doesn't have any of these nice attributes. Does that make sense? But now, when would you come in contact with this pure devotee? That's when you desire, when you want. It means when you want to know why I'm here, why it's a mess, why it doesn't work out, I'm trying so hard. At that point, then Krishna will send the pure devotees. Then you come in contact. And it's still up to you. Do you want to develop that? Or do you just want to, okay, that was nice, and then, you know, a few more lifetimes, and then another question. Right? So here we see is that this pastime is here because otherwise, okay, it gets around to things. But he's doing things that are useful in devotional service. Even though, you know, as a standard thing, we don't take Sukracharya as the, you know, shining light of pure bhakti. You know, he's not the first example to come to your mind, right? You know, working with the demons, okay, but still, it's not like Pallad Maharaj, okay? We're going to think of him, right? So, what's happening here? He is doing things because these are the duties. Now, where are these? Who establishes these duties, right? Did he get it off of all his friends on Facebook or saying about it, or he read it on the news, or, you know what I'm saying? No. Shastra says. So because Shastra says, he does it. He's accepted as a Brahmin. There's so many services he could do. Right? But the problem is because of, you know, his ego and all that, he's accepted a service that means he works for a king. Doesn't mean that he's, subservient. Just means that he has to bring his advice and time and energy in line with the usefulness for a king to run a kingdom, right? So an advisor to the king. So in Manu, that's not given a first priority. Brahmins would generally just do their own work first, and only if other works aren't available, then they take this up. So he was in the spirit, in the heavenly planets, and because of his fight with Brihaspati, then he, you know, okay, well, I'll show you. And then he went down to the demons. So now if he's going to be able to show Brihaspati, then he has to work with the kings. And then to work with the kings, he has to be the advisor. So that sets his occupation. But it's according to scripture. He never, even though he may be working with the demons, he never goes against the scriptures. Right? So that's the first thing. So because of that, now then working in that environment, that motive, passion and all that, then who's his daughter's friends, right? Because how many other Brahmins are hanging out there? So therefore, then it's going to be the daughters of the king and the other Kshatriyas and like that. So you're going to have much more passion, much more things like that. That's going to rub off, and therefore then you have the problems. And now he has to deal with that. He doesn't say, well, I'm a Brahmin, I don't have to deal with this. Yes, he didn't if he was just doing another occupation. That's why then he glorifies the occupation of the pigeon. Pigeon just, you know, when the market's going on, people are moving around, it stays away. But as soon as everybody leaves in the market, whatever grain's on the ground, he comes and picks that up. So it's peaceful. Nobody wants it. No one's going to bother you. You have no obligations. Right? And so then you can just do your sadhana, do your study, do your teaching with no problem. But because he's connected with the king, therefore he's obliged to be involved in that environment. Therefore you have the passions. Therefore then you have the chivalry, you know, all that rivalry and everything. And he has to deal with that. So he's already feeling bad about that. Then second, now he's going to have to ask from the king. Okay, he's giving advice to the king, that's okay. It's not as good as if he was not dealing with the kings. But then within that, now he has to ask something from the king. But he's doing it because it's necessary. Why? Because he has to support the daughter. Manu mentions that the father's relationship with the daughter is that of utmost kindness. So therefore, this is what she wants, then he has to go with it. Because he's working in that environment. If he was with Brahmins, it would be different. Right? You know, what Brahmin girls would do to each other would be different. There's going to be that rivalry, but it's going to be different. They're not going to toss you into a well and steal all your clothes. Right? You know, they'll do something else. Does that make sense? You know, something funny like that. But, and you say, you know, like you come out of the bathroom after you've washed your feet and you come out to wash them for the second time with the outside water because it's cleaner than the inside water, but they'll have moved that, so then you'll be stuck there, and then they'll laugh and then give you the water. Right? So that'll be the kind of harassment they'll do. Right? So he has to work in this. So we see as he's working according to Shastra. That's the foundation. That's what gives. That's why this story is here. If it wasn't according to Shastra, why would it be here? Right? So, that's there. That gives the strength for that. So, the devotees, they're in the same kind of situations. Right? They have family members. They have their occupations. They have to work according to these things. They're obliged even though they don't want to. And the modern thing, be yourself, be true to yourself, be free, be this and that, be a rat bag, be a, you know, like this. You know, the list goes on. And so therefore, yeah, you're true to yourself and everybody else in the world doesn't like you. How does that go for everybody? Right? So the here point is no, it creates this relationship. It creates this strength. It creates this bonding. It creates community. So in a day and age when we're talking about community, this is what creates community. Absolutely nothing else. And because it's Shastric, I can impudently say it with absolute conviction. Try all the other things, it doesn't work. It's not going to work. You say, what about the Amish? Yeah, they all dress exactly the same. They all have exactly the same values, live in the same kind of house, eat the same food that is established by their forefathers 200 years ago. So, who's doing that? We say, what about the Amish? I guarantee you, anyone who that comes out of their mouth never does any of those principles. That's also an absolute guarantee. Because otherwise, why we'd use the Amish? Right? Does that make sense? Why wouldn't we use our Acharyas? Right? Prabhupada says, you know, it's going on in the Vedic culture. They do the horoscopes before the marriage. So if the horoscope's not good, they don't even continue with it. If it's good, then they consider, okay, this looks good. Like I said, even 50 years ago. Right? So that's the kind of aspect. It won't work because it's Krishna's world. Not ours. Not the first world's world. It's Krishna's world. We have to always remember that. That faith will make the anarthas in our heart go away that give us that attachment to non-devotional values. But because we think that these values can actually give us something, that lack of faith, those anarthas won't go away. Because you have to surrender to Krishna, that Krishna will take care, then it works. Right? So we see now, having established this basis on the culture, and that you have this sense of community and all those things. So all this goes on, he has a strong relationship with his daughter, with the king, Vrishabhanu, and then with others like that, and then, you know, the whole relationship, all these different things go on properly. But here we see the difference that Prabhupada brings out. You see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's talking about Haridas Thakur and Vishwamitra. Right? Now here, then he's a qualified Brahmin, Sukracharya. So he does get angry because he is dealing in the material sphere. But in the mode of goodness, according to Shastra. But because mode of goodness means there's some mix of other modes, he will get angry because of the situation, because of the situation he's in, because the situation has been created by his daughter, but it's created by the situation he's taken up as an occupation. So he does become angry. But you see, because of proper character, I mean culture and everything, King Vrishabhanu, he knows he's upset, he comes out immediately, tries to pacify him because he is the guru. He doesn't say, hey, what's the trip? It's just a bunch of girls. What are you getting this so serious about this for? Right? We don't see those lines here. Right? In other words, the screenwriter here, you know, wasn't one of these new guys. It was Vyasadeva, right? So he's not going to include that kind of stuff. Right? So here then, he goes on as he came out. He tried to pacify. Why? Because he is the guru. Because he accepts authority. The king doesn't accept authority. No one will accept them as authority. So those who are managing don't accept those above them. No one below them will ever listen to them. And that's also an absolute fact. Because it's Krishna's world. Right? So then, here he gets angry. Why? Because he's a materialist. So this is the point, is that these things are good preparation that are useful tools in devotional service, but they will not produce devotional service. Because they're just qualities. Devotion, that's another thing. Right? But we see is that the devotees, then because they see different, right? What he's seeing, his position, his occupation, the difficulty that comes up, right? You see immediately he's situated in goodness. Why? Because he's disturbed because of the irregularity that's coming up in their regular duties. It's one of the symptoms of the mode of goodness, is you don't like disturbances to your regular schedule. Right? Which is okay if you can maintain that, but if you have things that come up due to all these things, it's a problem. So because he's seeing things from the mode of goodness, he still gets disturbed, he still is getting angry. While we see then the pure devotees, they see differently. So it's not that they're better at controlling. That's generally we think, oh no, they just grit their teeth harder or something like that. You ever notice that the pure devotees' teeth, they're always flat, the molars are flat because they grit so much like that, you know, so, yeah. So, no. You know, those guys with the Hollywood smile like that, they're not devotees, because otherwise the devotees would have already made their teeth flat, right? So, yeah. No. It's that they don't see in the same way. They're not judging by my material satisfaction, the mode of goodness, is being disturbed because of these considerations of a touch of passion, a lot of ignorance on the part of these girls. And now he's going to have to go deal with the passion of, you know, he has to deal with his daughter, but now Vrishabhanu, the other party, is his daughter. Right? So then you have the two of them over their daughter, they have to support their daughter, but at the same time as Vrishabhanu, being the king, is subservient to Sukracharya as has his Brahmin, and then you're hoping he's going to take that route. And we see he has, because he came out to take it, offer obeisance. So it's going smoothly. But still, it's an anxiety, because that's the perspective. But for the pure devotee, they have a different perspective. So the position on which they judge the situation is different. They see it's about Krishna. It's Krishna's arrangement. So therefore, what's to get upset about? I'm in the material world. Material world means it's crazy. It's going to be stupid. The idea, no, we'll make this perfect world. It's like, yeah, that's like guys going into the, what do you call it? Grand Central Terminal station bathrooms and saying, we're going to make this into heaven. Right? It's just not going to happen. You know, oh, we'll try this. We'll use this incense, or we'll use one of those little, you know, you plug them in and you put some water and some oil and it makes that little fog, you know. Yeah, we'll do something like that. It's not going to happen. So they don't see that way. They're not trying to make the material world better. They're trying to be absorbed in Krishna's service. And because of that, they don't get angry. Not because of the material platform. Any disturbance is what's lacking in bhakti. Right? But because of their inherent compassion, then they're going to be kind. Does that make sense? This thing where you have to set an example and all this and that, that's not devotional. Because the example is, you know, the prostitute, right? She comes to Haridas Thakur, is trying to harass like that. Then she hears the chanting. Then she takes up the chanting and now she's a pure devotee. That's the example. But no, she must be punished, she must be flogged, she must be this, she must be thrown out. That's material. On a good day. Right? Because we're saying material is kind of a neutral point, you know? So the whole thing is good is Krishna conscious, bad is not Krishna conscious. And when we think all these other things, no, they must be punished, they must be this, because we think we can make a nice material world. And how does it work out for Devayani? Right? Because she made this girl her maidservant and all that, and trying to control her life and all this, and won't let it go. Right? Brahmins are supposed to let it go, but she's not letting it go. Why? Because she hangs out with Kshatriyas. And it backfires on her. That's the problem of the material world. You try to make the material world better on its own based on material desire, not based on Shastra, it will come around. Everything is cyclic. So those teeth that you're working with, they do come around. And they come up behind you. Right? We'll let you fill in the dots. Right? Does that make sense? So here we see is that because of this, but the good mode of goodness, because of training and all that, he can contain his anger. Therefore, then it'll go smoothly. But still the anxiety and all that's there. Well, in devotional service, the perspective is different. The value system is different. It's based on seeing it, how it's pleasing to Krishna. They don't see it from the mundane level. And because of that, that's what makes all these things go nicely. Not that the pure devotees have some far out techniques and tricks on how they control and this and that. No, it's that it doesn't come up because you're absorbed in Krishna. Right? And so it's an open secret. It's about Krishna. Right? Always remember Krishna, never forget. Then it always works. Yes, so that aspect then we've discussed on that. Thank you. Any questions or comments or no? That original doubt, yes. Okay.
Hare Krishna. We see Prabhupada, he was pure devotee and he see every living entity, every devotee as very important that they have a special future
in relation
with Krishna. But sometimes our mentality, we see it just ourselves. I'm important, my future, but others are just, I don't know, some other living being. How to break this kind? If everybody think in this way, did it create trouble?
Yes, how to break it if we're important and everybody else's. We're important and everybody else's. Their importance is only in connection with how they support our importance. Right? That would be the essential, point? Yeah. So, in here is that you have, the soul has some natural qualities. So one of the most prominent one of them is compassion. Right? It has various aspects to it, but that general aspect it will bring out is that of compassion. So that's inherent in the jiva, and it's a natural quality. So when that compassion, that mood, that quality is directed at Krishna, it's called bhakti. Right? When it's directed at other living entities, it'll take on three features. Right? It'll take on respect, it'll take on compassion or mercy, and it'll take on, what do you call it? Where you're not really bothered about something. It's not that you ignore, but it's not you don't deal with them. Indifference, yes, exactly. So indifference, mercy, and respect. The same qualities, three features of compassion. So then one has that friendship and respect with the devotees. You have that compassion and mercy to the innocent and indifference for those who are not inclined towards devotional service or who are against devotional service. That's just natural. In the spiritual world, because you don't have those who are, you know, how you say, innocent and, who are non-devotees, the quality that's manifest there, this compassion only manifests as friendship. So you have friendship with the devotees and devotion towards the Lord, that bhakti towards the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah? So when we switch to that understanding and act in our natural qualities, then these other anomalies just go away. But because they don't, if it's not happening naturally, then we have to use the intelligence, right? Buddhi yoga. We use the intelligence of yoga. So then we know it's not good. We shouldn't be selfish. We shouldn't be, behave badly with others and all these things. So then we have to intellectually catch ourselves and try to correct it, like we see Shukracharya did. That's the example that's useful. Despite the situation, the intensity, right, he was able to, with his intelligence, control the situation and speak nicely and deal nicely. Right? So that's then what we do. We use the intelligence because the mind is not inclined towards it. When the mind is inclined towards the actual natural devotional process, then that's when the mind is the best friend. But when it's not, and it's not so friendly, you have to use the intelligence. So that's why we hear the stories, we hear the things about what qualities to use, how to use them, and everything, what's good, what's not good. And we base it on scripture, because that works. That's why the examples are there. It works. He's a materialist, but it worked. But we see for others, they can't maintain it. Because it changes from day to day. What you're angry at today, tomorrow you can't be angry at. Because, you know, how you say it, the flavor has changed. We think it's a new thing, this political correctness. But Orson Welles wrote about it. I'm not sure when he wrote the book, but like in the 30s or 40s. It was called 1984. I don't know if you've heard of it. Anyone's heard of it? Okay. A few people have heard about it. Yeah. And he already talked about that. It just changes day to day. And so today people are thinking, oh yeah, this is the new, the fresh thing. No, this is old. And he only observed what was already going on. He didn't make it up. He just observed what was already there and going on in history. Right? So that's the problem. It's always going on. Socrates had the same problem 2,500 years ago. Just what was politically correct, he wasn't politically correct, so the guys who are politically correct poisoned him. Hey. But they won't do it themselves directly. They oblige him to do it so they can feel like they're good guys. Oh, we didn't do anything. He drank it himself. You know what I'm saying? So I'm saying it's always been like that. Because we have to remember, again, it's Krishna's world. It's the modes of nature. Krishna says how it'll work. Right? So that won't give us at all a basis. It may give us an idea. Oh, we become aware that, okay, people don't like that. From political correctness, great, but unless you find where it's in Shastra, why Shastra says it's not good, you'll never be able to correct it. Because in a couple of days it'll change anyway by the modern system.
So you have to base it on Shastra. That always works. So what Shukracharya was using millions of years ago works today, despite what people say. Oh, it's old, it's archaic, you can't do it. Right. Yeah, sure. It's the laws of nature. It always works. You just have to be intelligent enough to apply it. Does that make sense? So with your intelligence, then you can understand, I'm not the center of the universe. That's why the emphasis on we're 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, Krishna's unlimited, that starts to give us an idea. Right? It's all controlled by his energies, which are also unlimited, and we're still 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. And even when we become Lord Brahma, we're still 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. And we die, and Krishna doesn't, nor his energies. So we start to slowly, slowly see, well, maybe I have to rethink this. Right? Because we can say, okay, I'm the center of my universe, but the universe belongs to Krishna, so... And that means all these various universes that we have are all universal form. And we have eye and ear and nose and this and that mentality from the universal form put together by our karma into this particular external body. Right? And so it's still Krishna's. It still works according to Krishna's rules. We can't really claim it's mine. It's yours to use by it's your quota. But you can't say it's yours. You know, it's just, you know what I'm saying? Just like you buy some land in the state and you say it's yours. As far as all practical purposes it goes, it's yours. But it belongs to the state. It's ultimately not yours. But the state agrees that we're working in this way and you can buy and sell land and all this, as long as you follow the rules. But you don't follow the rules, they can take the land. They can take you, put you in jail and take your land. Right? You know, put it up for sale, use that money for charity, and then like that. They can do that. But if you do everything nicely, they don't. So it's your body. But it still doesn't belong to you. All that yours and center, all these things all come from Krishna, from his universal form. You know? And so yours come from that, everybody else is coming from that. Therefore, you see, you have that compassion for everyone. See, the difficulty comes up in these modern things is that, okay, even if we have compassion, that compassion is very stunted in the material world. The spiritual world is very, very great. That friendship with all living entities there is standard. But here it's stunted. So it starts with that compassion for ourselves. Because you generally see we're quite kind with ourselves. You know, it's like how you say that thing of the rose and the thunderbolt. You know, so we're as soft as a rose about ourselves and as hard as a thunderbolt with everybody else. You know, set the standard, make everything right. And you know, you gotta, yeah, you know, that's, isn't that how it works, right? So, we start ourselves, that expands to family, that community, to varna, to nation. Then some will say, oh, you know, all mankind, like that. But that, or some, it's, you know, they're nationalistic, it's about the nation and all these things. But all of these are restricted. So the only ways they won't be restricted is it's you have that compassion for all living entities. Not just humans, every living entity. And so you deal with them according to what is your position, how you're supposed to deal. Right? Then, and where do you get that? How do you know that? By what Krishna says, what Shastra says, what the Acharyas say. That's universal. Just because we're a little intellectual and went to school and therefore we have a few other friends that we hang out with and they come up with some idea, we will say it's universal. But it's not. Only what Krishna gives is universal, since he is the universe. It's his law, it came from him, it's his breathing. Right? And his breath is what pervades the universe and gives life to everything. So it's him. So therefore, as we see, like Shankaracharya, he can control that bad behavior by basing it on Shastra and seeing what's the intelligent thing to do. What is the culture? What's the obligation? What's the duty? Right? Like that. Is that okay? Yes. Yes, you had something, or? Hello. Some switch.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. You mentioned something about Shukracharya. I didn't exactly understand. Is Shukracharya not a demon, but just kind of stuck in a weird situation, and therefore he's associated as so?
He's the Lord of Venus. He's from the demigod circle, right? He's in that 33 million demigods. But because of his, animosity, or not animosity, inimicalness, you know, with Brihaspati, he's the priest of the demigods. He's also a big Brahmin, but somehow or another, I don't know the history of it, why they fought. Then he left and went down and became the priest for the demons. You understand? Because he's accepting that duty, he has to perform the duty nicely. So he has to take care and advise them best how they can be successful. But by that association, then so many crazy things came up, because you are hanging out with demons and they do funny things. Right? Does that make sense? And so therefore he understands with intelligence that this is not good. He knows what the standard is. And so within it, because Shastra says if you're doing a particular occupation, you follow the rules of that occupation. You don't today follow them, tomorrow don't, whatever's to your advantage. No, you have an occupation, you follow it. You want to follow something else, you have to change the occupation. But you can only change what you have the nature for. Being a Brahmin, he can change to something else within the Brahminical. But it'll still be a problem. Right? Because you're on the material platform. Like Dronacharya, he was doing one aspect and so he doesn't have much facility. Then the other boys are harassing his son. So then he wants to have more facility, so he goes and becomes a Brahmin for the kings. Teaches the school there and all that, but because he's become the Brahmin for the kings, you know, means Duryodhana's side. Then the difficulty comes is because they have a war, he has to be involved to direct them, and because of their nature, they won't just leave him alone as a Brahmin, because they think if he fights, then no one can defeat him, so then they agitate him so that he'll, by his false ego, then agree to fight. And as soon as he agrees to fight, now he's not considered doing the occupation of Brahmin, so he's a Kshatriya, and now you can kill him. That's why you stick to, you know, within your duties, and ideally within that as high a level as you can function as possible. If there's no other alternative, you use the lower ones. But if you can, you always avoid, because they always will give you trouble. The lower down you go, the more trouble there is. That's why they're lower. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, if you're an animal trainer, so if you're training butterflies, you have less problem than if you're training pit bulls. You know. Yeah? Okay? Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. I hope this question is defined enough. It's kind of nebulous because I don't know the answer, but okay. You quoted scripture, Manu, that the father should be very kind to the daughter.
Right.
And the materialist, they really go gung-ho on family.
Right.
Probably sometimes more so than a devotee would carry out the duty that would apply to them. Is there a limit for the devotee parent where, you know, they would be crossing the line because Krishna will not be pleased and you're trying to?
Okay. Yes. Yes. The line is what you can afford, right? By time, by effort, by emotions, by money. You know. In other words, if what's desired is within the realm of appropriate, then you try your best to fulfill it. That's how it works. Because if the father is so kind to the daughter, that means that principle, the father represents authority, that principle. Now if that's there, then, and that relationship with the father is strong, then that means the relationship with the husband will be strong for the daughter, the relationship with Guru, the relationship with Krishna will be strong. All that's there. because Krishna is the most kind. Like you see, how does he deal, the Pandavas and that, he's dealing in one particular way, and so many others in a particular way. But you'll notice how he's dealing with Draupadi has its uniqueness, that it has that feminine flavor. Right? You know, for the others, nothing happens. You know, just like, let's say, okay, we take Prahlad Maharaj, right? You know, the demons are trying to kill him, but they can't actually get at him or this, so they try, nothing happens, and so just nothing happens. So how would the pastime be going down? Would it be as attractive as, was it Dushasana? Is he the one who's pulling on the sari? Yeah, so he's pulling, but he can't pull it off. It's so, you know, so he pulls, he gets everything, gets all his brothers all in a line like that, and they can't pull it. It's just the same sari, just the end of the sari, and that's it. Right? But no, he's able to pull the sari, but then Krishna gives unlimited sari. It has a different flavor. You see, there's a feminine flavor there. So that's the whole point, is this aspect of it, is that you're dealing with the daughter. Means training her to be a good girl and all that, that direct training, that's what the mother does. But training her on how to, you know, what is the standard of being taken care of as a girl, that's what the father does. Because you know that standard, then now she can expect that from the husband. But if she doesn't know, then she'll ask beyond or less, or, you know, what's the proper, appropriate thing. So there's very refined things going on here that will simultaneously say, oh, it's Vedic, it doesn't apply now, we don't care, and we just chant, we're not fanatics, so we throw out any Vedic opportunity. But because we can't function without religion, then we'll just fall back on whatever our previous Purva Samskar is. And depending on how great that was, then, yeah. You know, saying, so one's supposed to take care, but it's within, so that it's kindness, in which is, if it's something that's not right, it's worked out in kindness. But like here, a girl getting married and her friends and that being maidservants and all that, it does happen in certain circles, but it normally will be within your own circle. But here, where you're crossing circles, Brahmin girl marrying a Kshatriya, but then bringing Kshatriya girls with, and this and that, that's kind of not exactly standard, but that's the only opportunity for her to get married. She can only marry a Kshatriya because of the curse of Kacha. Right? So, you know. So then, one has to consider that. One's always trying to do and do nicely, and, you know, things that are feminine, that are nice, and bring out that feminine aspect. Does that make sense? The dealings, the food, the dress, the clothes, the experiences, you know, the emotions, it's all there. And we can say, as all that we're devotees, that's materialistic, but then on what point is the external form of marriage spiritual? You know what I'm saying? Because if we're not the body, we're the soul, then why are we getting married? You know what I'm saying? So that's the funny. It's like, I remember when in the temple in 73, then the brahmacharis are all there, you know, gung-ho brahmacharis. Then one brahmachari decides he's going to get married. It's arranged. And all the brahmacharis are, okay, this and that. And then on the final thing, when he's arranging and he's putting on the white clothes, then the brahmacharis were satisfied. Okay, he's wearing white externally, but he should keep wearing his saffron kopans. You know, then, yes, you know, it's kind of like, who are these guys? You know, it's like, but, you know, hey, you know, that's it made him feel okay, you know. So the whole point is that dealing with family life is part of varnashram, which is part of religion. So you're engaging religion in Krishna's service. The devotion is what's spiritual. Right? That we're not the body of the soul, that's a spiritual position. But that's not devotion itself. You have to use that in Krishna's service. Right? The impersonalist is not the body, but they're not doing any service. The devotee is doing service. Because he's not conditioned, he can just do things for Krishna without any material consideration. So this idea to use, I'm not this body, to clear any religious rules that I don't like, so that I can act within vikarma, right? I'm clear karma, and then I can establish vikarma, because I've used philosophy. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a standard technique I use. And somebody who is religious, even though I'm not religious, I'll use religious against them to get them to do what I want. You know, it's a very standard process. So we have to be very careful. Marriage is religion. It has a process. It has its rules. It has its expectations. And what's the whole point? It still is a basis for the principles behind it are still connected to Krishna, though we're not necessarily seeing them. But it's still respect for the family members, that sense of duty, that sense of obligation, that sense of selflessness. I do my obligations, therefore they get their rights, but then they reciprocate by their obligations back. And that's what's nice. So the family doesn't do much together, then there's no taste there. And that's fine if that was the amount of attachment that's there before getting married. Then you marry someone of that equal lack of attachment. That's why a Brahmin marries a Brahmin. They generally have their degree of attachment has a certain kind. So even though the experience for them is intense, you know, it's like on the oscillator, it moves like this. You know? But for them, that's whoa. You know, but the Kshatriya is just like this. You know, otherwise, what's the fun, right? You know. So, these things have to be accepted. Therefore, you have to be considerate of the feelings that all these things, because if it's a matter of, no, you know, this is not devotional service, then don't get married. Literally. So we see Shankaracharya, Sukracharya, he doesn't like this, but he's accepted that duty. He does the duty. Right? So that's the way it is. That's responsible. And if that's the standard and people are responsible, then you have community. But as soon as everyone does their own thing, that's not community. We're talking, everyone's the same, everyone's equal, everyone's equal opportunity, all these different things. But how does that work? What's the practical? Who's giving it? You know, it's like the socialists, they think that, you know, they must get everything. And then they go out and strike and burn the buses and all that. It was all government stuff. Who has to pay for that? Them. They're not smart. There's no brains here. So that's the problem is that the means gets the end. Right? You use a particular means, you get a particular end. So when you use this means of, you know, it's not devotion, we're not this body and all that, whenever we like, we get the end of impersonalism. And then the problem is we don't get the benefits of Jnana Yoga because we're attached. We're performing karma yoga, but we use the philosophy of jnana yoga. And that doesn't work out well. You know what I'm saying? Jnana yoga works for when you're detached. Karma yoga works for when you are attached and you're engaging attachments in Krishna service. So therefore that kindness is there. You use your intelligence, of course. It has to fit within your culture, within the standards. That's what the father's doing. What are the standards and seeing that that's done? The actual day-to-day running of things and what's going to happen is the family, not him. As a matter of fact, don't get married if you think you're going to fulfill all your desires. Like that. That doesn't exist. Because the point is we're supposed to fulfill Krishna's desires, so there isn't a situation where you can be Krishna and fulfill your desires because you're not Krishna. Because in fulfilling Krishna's desires, then you're actually filling your own, because Krishna then interacts and takes care of the devotee. He just wants to work on equal level. If you're not just 100% surrendered to him, how is he 100% surrendered to you? Right? In exchange, he's sitting in the heart. It means even your mom won't do that. You know? Does that make sense? You know, when her 3 o'clock in the afternoon soapy's on, you know, you can go do your homework or something. Go out play with the boys, you know, like that, you know. No, so it's just He's committed. We have to be committed. These are all the ways that are there. But if we look at him from this modern perspective, this vikarmic perspective, you can't see it. But when you look at it from what's being given by the acharyas, then you can see is all these things are given because they're supportive of pure bhakti. But if we're not on pure bhakti, yes, we get the benefits of those things. But it's about Krishna, so it's progressive, and slowly, slowly they go away. You know, the environment may remain. You see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's there. He's got a big, you can't say he doesn't have a big family. He's got a fabulous job. He's got a big family. He's got good position. He's got good everything. But he's got, you know, it's going on. But at the same time, that's not the point. It's about Krishna. Same time, he's chanting his 64 rounds, he's writing books, he's meeting people, you know, and he's not frothing at the mouth. You know? Okay. Uh-huh. We're good? Okay. Go ahead. Okay? No, it's time is up. Like that. What was your? You okay? Okay. Sorry. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki. Jainatai Gaur Premanandini.